Welcome to the Procurement Games podcast and open conversations where we pose the question, is the field ever leveled in our favor? Of course, we are talking about procurement and contracting of minority, women, and veteran-owned small businesses deemed to be the underutilized firms in government and private corporation contracting. So, my name is Arlen Pingle, and I am a proud Filipina-American entrepreneur. I lead Mackie Company, a strategic consulting organization focused on procurement supply chain management. We basically help government agencies and private companies design race, ethnic, and gender-conscious contract policies and procedures. More importantly, we help folks like you build capacity, capability, and sustainability. Now, as I mentioned before, this is not a platform to gripe. We are sharing your stories and experiences, but we also want to share how the system works and, more importantly, how to beat it. And if we can find a way to generate solutions that make sense for you, we will do that too. Today in our studio, we have CEO of J. Benson Construction, Paul Endlin, to talk to us about his experiences and the barriers, challenges, and successes he's had in the procurement process. Welcome to the show, Paul. How are you today?
I am wonderful, Lynn. Good morning. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing good. Well, first I want to thank you for coming on today and talking about you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the industry, how you got into it, and more importantly, what drove you to get into the construction?
Sure. So construction is a second career for me. I'm about 3 years into construction now. It's been great. It's been interesting. It's been challenging. It's been terrifying. A whole whirlwind of emotions. How did I get into construction? Like I said, this is a second career for me. My previous career, I was a criminal defense lawyer for 12 years here in the Twin Cities. I was in private practice right out of law school, doing all manner of criminal defense cases, guns, drugs, sex, including murder cases. And that was a career that I really loved. I was really passionate about it. It was really engaging, exciting. And then there came a time where it just got to be awful and stressful. And the sexiness, for lack of a better term, wore off. And I just got to feel the weight of what was happening, what my clients were involved in. It just got to be too much for me. It wasn't solely the acts that the defendants were in. It was just more the system as a whole that got to wear me down. It got to be the circumstances that I saw my clients' lives in, coming from broken homes, coming from challenging communities, kind of that cycle that I was seeing where my clients were in this pipeline of their friends, cousins, brothers, community members were all in prison, had been in prison. That was kind of their trajectory. And that is what really wore me down, and my inability to do anything about that as their lawyer. Even if I had a great result for them or got them out of their case, that didn't change their life circumstances. And so how I dealt with that was I didn't know how to deal with it. You know, that stress of what I was seeing, what I was involved in, overwhelmed me personally, overwhelmed me emotionally, and it was something where I proceeded to kind of just drink to numb the pain of what I was seeing. And I share that because that's a part of my story. That resulted in me, you know, drinking my marriage away, drinking my career away, causing a lot of personal pain to my family, those that I cared about, those that cared about me. So fast forwarding to construction, one of the things that I love about construction is that it has the ability to literally and figuratively rebuild communities, rebuild lives. And as the owner and CEO, that's something that I really look at now as my opportunity and responsibility, is to look to employ people, employ those folks that have been historically unemployed, underemployed, those folks who used to be my clients and the people that look like them and who come from those life circumstances, and how I work to try to get those folks engaged and involved in construction, which I see as a way to get a new life for themselves and for their future and for communities.
That's definitely a changer, right? I mean, you went from changing the storyline of your clients as an attorney to changing storylines of community and construction, which is totally cool. My question to you, though, is you said that you got out of law school and dived right into practicing law. Did you practice law with another firm, or were you always entrepreneurial and right off the cuff started your own practice?
Right out of the gate, I open my own practice. And so, you know, I think that's my inner entrepreneur or my inner fool or some combination of the two. Just kind of where I've been. That's where I come from, is where I believe that I can do it. I have this vision. And then, you know, I can tell you when I opened up my own practice, I was kind of feeling myself. You know, I'm a lawyer. I feel like I'm a smart guy. I know what I'm doing. Well, I opened up my practice and had my office and it looked great. And then I just sat in my office and looked at the phone and waited for it to ring.
Sure.
I thought, how come my phone isn't ringing? I'm really smart. I'm really good, sure. You know? And so part of this is having a vision, having a goal. And then sometimes I don't know what I don't know until I get involved, and then I have to pivot and redirect and double down my efforts. So it took from having no business to finding a way to create business, develop business, handle that business, manage it and grow it. So a lot of things are transferable from that experience to pivot to construction.
Now, I will tell you that in over 1,500 businesses that I've supported, there is definitely a pattern of knowledge, education, experience, and in a good way, cockiness that drives entrepreneurs to start their own business. I think that's really the inspiration for the majority of us, you know? Now, let's pivot a little bit and focus on what you love about being an entrepreneur.
I would say what I love the most, the people that I get to work with, my employees, the people that I've gotten the opportunity to meet in other construction companies, other folks that are subcontractors, large GCs, small GCs, specialty contractors, and those like yourself that are partners in the industry, partners in the space, particularly those that are similarly aligned in thought and ideas and action, right? And so a lot of this is trying to align myself with folks, not just who view things the way and see the world in the way that I do, but also those that are looking to actually effectuate change and to make steps in that. And that's not always a straight line, right? And some of that is trial and error. And we try some things and they don't work. But trying and doesn't work is a hell of a lot better than not doing.
And it's a learning curve. I mean, that's the beauty of entrepreneurship, is nothing is ever the same. It's always a challenge and a success. And, you know, we have to take the time to really appreciate the people that are in our ecosystem, right? And really aligning with the impactful ones, because not everybody's impactful. I think as an entrepreneur myself, I find it to be very rewarding when you have individuals like you two who are in your sphere that is driving that needle forward, for especially if we are, since we are minorities. Let's talk about Jay Benson. What is Jay Benson? Tell me a little bit about your core competency, the overview of Jay Benson.
Sure. So Jay Benson was founded in 1971, 50 years ago, and has been a general contractor for the last 50 years during that time. Most of that time has been doing construction work related to insurance. So think fire damage, storm damage, water damage. That would be on residential homes, multifamily, and commercial. Over those 50 years, we've been a preferred contractor for every major insurance carrier that you can think of. And so, you know, if you had an issue at your house and you called your insurance company, they would advise you that they would send out a contractor that they know and trust. We would be, you know, on those lists. And that's how, you know, we were getting and performing much of our business over the last 50 years. Now, last year in November, when I took over the company and acquired it, I aligned that with a purposeful pivot away from the restoration work into that more traditional commercial vertical contractor. And people have asked me, well, why are you doing that? Why are you changing your business model that you've been using? You guys have all these contacts in this space. Why would you just turn that off or get rid of it? And the answer is so that we can employ more people, so we can create more change, so we can have more impact. And so that's what we've been doing over the last year. Some of the other changes that's been related to that is we've been a member of Associated General Contractors. I'm the co-chair of the AGC Minnesota DEI Leadership Council. We've joined the Carpenters Union. I would anticipate that in the next few months, and maybe they will be members of the Laborers Union as well. And then we've made some key hires to really ratchet up our credibility in the marketplace and to allow us to make this transition more smoothly for us. And so the type of opportunities that we are involved in now, again, as we've moved away from the restoration space, are commercial GC opportunities, construction management opportunities, includes, you know, TI work, ground up work as well, And then we also work as a subcontractor for larger GCs looking for contractors to assist them on projects. And so our sweet spot is self-performing finish and rough carpentry, as well as demo labor. So those are the spots where we self-perform on our own projects, as well as work as a subcontractor for other trade partners and GCs.
The fact that you recognize the importance of not just self-performing work, but also GCing the bigger projects, that gives you a pathway, obviously, to grow and scale. I think the last thing that I do admire and I have to commend is the fact that you are going to be a minority-owned business with Union. That is really, really significant because the vertical or commercial realm is union-driven. And in order to compete in that realm, even as a subcontractor, most of the big guys, the primes, again, a word I don't like to use, look for that union. And a lot of minority businesses do get less favored because they are not in the union. Have you had conversations with the union? How has that gone? How long has that been stirring in your mind that you want to become a union shop?
Well, a long time. So it's stirring in my mind for years. Construction seems like a great spot to be. There's room for, you know, this again, Thor was still in business. If there's room for Mortensen, Ryan, McGough, KA, all these big GCs, there's got to be room for me and for Tri and for Thor all together, right? Why couldn't, you know, seem like there'd be room for that as well? And then I was aware that, again, to play in this larger space with these large GCs, that would require us to be a union contractor. So I engaged the carpenters and labor unions in conversations over 12 months ago, and with the help of AGC of Minnesota and AGC's general counsel, Mike Schechter, who had instrumental in setting up conversations that happened periodically over the last 12 to 16 months. Got to ask a lot of questions. I would say both unions, I found them to be very patient. I was very transparent in that I was in a kind of exploratory phase. I'm trying to understand the pros, the cons, the challenges. And, you know, this was a major business decision for me. It comes with a, you know, financial challenges. Like any risk, there's potential reward. And you have to take the risk before you can reap any possible reward, if any comes, right? So there's no guarantee that just because I become a union contractor that work will come.
Absolutely. But you gotta work hard on that one.
but I know if I didn't jump and if I didn't take that leap, I was gonna have no shot at working with the big guys because it's just a barrier to entry. And there's no judgment on that from me. That's just, it's more of a matter of fact if that's how it is. And I understand that on some project there's collective bargaining agreements or project labor agreements. And again, I don't have a judgment on those necessarily. In order for me to really accelerate and get to where I want to be, or at least give my shot at getting to where I want to be more quickly, the union was key to me. And like I said, we're currently signed with carpenters. I found them to be very professional, very willing to listen, and willing to find a way to reach back to me and extend the hand in partnership. We reached a point of compromise where I gave a little bit, they gave a little bit, and then I made the jump.
You know what I love about that? You know, a lot of folks know what the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota can do, but what really it is the advocacy that they have for even small businesses. It's not just the big guys that they advocate for, obviously, but they actually help minority-owned businesses who are their members in facilitating, like you said, conversations with the union. The other thing that I want to bring up, and sometimes this is a very touchy subject surrounding the union. I love that the union, and that you're putting it out there, the union is willing to talk, willing to have conversations with minority-owned small business. And the fact that you were very transparent in your process in determining whether you want to do the union is pretty cool. Because most people hear the negative side of the union, and that's cue music, and we're going to dive into that. There's a history, and I'm sure you've heard the stories before, and then some research, of lack of minority participation in union, right? There's not a lot of minority-owned business, because being in the union is perceived as a barrier itself. So how did you enter the union conversation and say, look, as part of my business model, I'm coming into the union, this is what it looks like, but how did they address the barrier that exists or the perspective that the unions aren't really for minorities?
Well, one, like I said, I had over a year to get to know some of the business agents from the unions, to tour their training facilities, to get to meet more folks. And I tried to come into it with less of my own preconceived notions of what the union is and just try to be more open. Certainly with that, I'm aware of a general perception that maybe unions are less welcoming to minorities, that unions, the construction industry as a whole, tends to be more white, tends to be more male, and, you know, maybe hasn't historically been welcoming to minority folks and to women. Well deserves to some extent of where things have been. Again, coming in, I'm not bringing that approach or finger-pointing approach at the union.
Awesome.
I'm here to understand, knowing I'm going to go union for my business. How can I make that work for me? And the unions are not chock-full of folks that look like me or that are women or other BIPOC individuals. How can I help be a part of that solution, not just complain about the problem? And so, you know, I've had the opportunity to get to know Lewis King, the CEO at Summit Academy. So what we've done is we've hired a few Summit graduates already. So those folks come out of Summit with a 20-week education and some basic construction skills. I can now, as a union contractor, take them out of that Summit apprenticeship program, get them started as a union apprentice. They have a clear path up. They have a good starting salary with benefits. They have a pension. And I can, again, help create that change of hiring folks out of Summit, whether they're black, white, red, green. These are people that are traditionally have been, more people of color, right? But they've been trained, they're hungry, they're interested, and that can help diversify the union. And I can help be a part of that change and not just look at the union and saying, well, what are you doing?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Can play an active role in that as well.
And I think that's the key there. Positioning ourselves for the win, coming up with a strategy that best fits your model, I think that it opens more doors, right? And it opens more opportunities for us. And I think the mindset that you have, and that's a volunteer advice, but I think it's a great advice, Paul, about going into the union with a different set of lens, with an open mind, rather than the perceived notions that this is what they're doing to us. It's really more what can you do for me than it is what you've done to me. That's resounding, especially in the union realm, because there's a lot of conceptions, perhaps, of the union. Now, I'm not going to say that they're entirely innocent of it, because they've done some stuff that I could sit here and go, let me question that. But at the end of the day, the fact that they came to the table with open mind to negotiate and have a conversation with you, and I think speaks volumes, because I'm not really sure that that's really something that everybody knows. You know, they think that it's just, you know, you have to do it our way, you can't negotiate with us, and that's it. And what I'm hearing today is you took some time to really get to know the system, really understand who the players are, and make the determination of what's going to work for you.
I ain't got time to be a victim. You know, I'm trying to run a business. I'm not going for
that,
right? I got to make it happen, right? So kind of this, set these goals. How do we get to these goals? How do we make it happen? How can we find allies and advocates in the community to work with and assist us versus how can I piss people off?
Right.
I'm not doing that. I'm not built for that. I don't got a plan B, right? I got to make it work.
I always welcome the union conversation, because the union conversation is key for those in the commercial realm, in the vertical realm, especially since that's what's going on. Are there projects out there that are non-union? Yes, there are. And we're not going to say everybody should be in the union, right? But having a conversation with the union, always open to, because it's a platform for education for our community. It's really, really key that they know that the conversations are happening. And if you do have that goal, if you do want to move the needle forward, then the victim card can't be played.
I think the unions are open to change as well, because they're looking around and seeing their workforce is aging. And so in order to keep the unions fresh and to keep them strong, they need an influx of new workforce as well. And there's plenty of construction work to go around. So I think that they are in need and also want a solution, are looking to be solution driven as well. And Again, I'd like to be a part of that and hope that our other BIPOC or, you know, WMBE contractors are looking to go there as well.
And I would encourage other folks who are curious about the unions, interested in the unions. You know, I'd be happy to talk to you about those questions or concerns. And I would also encourage you to reach out to the unions directly.
And I think if we can support and figure out a pathway for them to open those conversations, I think a good thing. And, you know, like I said, having the unions here to have that conversation and hear their trailblazing story would also be kind of cool. Let's move on to another topic here, Paul. What's the success? And I know you just into the realm, you're launching the commercial side of the fence. You are basically in strategy mode right now for positioning.
I would say that the last year has been a lot of strategy, as you say, a lot of working to execute on that strategy, pivoting on that strategy. Much of that has been involved in relationship building, in networking, whether through AGC or CCC. Had the opportunity to work with Mortenson Construction, who was through some relationships that developed over time again. Got to like each other, got to trust each other before an opportunity ever came. And then at some point, a phone call came and said, hey, Paul, would you guys take a look at this project for us on West Broadway? Jumped at it. I believe we did very well, because then after that another project came, nice. Another project came, nice. And I think we're up to 8 projects now on West Broadway and a handful over on Lake Street. That took time. Absolutely. It's still taking time.
Sure.
You know, and so I think that's been one thing that I've had to realign and readjust my expectations, because I want stuff right now. You know, I think like, you know, yeah. Like all of us, we want what we want when we want it, which is now. And how much do we want more. But at the same time, this is a long-term process in the right direction, and grow it steady and inch by inch and do it well. I know that to be successful in the long term, the work has got to speak for itself.
Yes.
Not be in a minority-owned business. The minority-owned business might allow us to get to the table, to have a conversation, to have a cup of coffee, but we've got to then do the work, and we've got to do it great, and we've got to do it well every time. But it's been fun.
I think that's really key. I think we shouldn't lead as a minority-owned business, an Asian-owned or a Black-owned business. Let our performance speak in what we can do. Because don't look at the color of my skin, don't look at my gender, don't look at my ethnicity. I would rather you say we are a construction company focused on this, and oh, by the way, we happen to be minority. What roadblocks in the industry have you faced?
I would say that one of those barriers for us of getting started has been lifted with becoming union signatory.
Sure.
It takes away that barrier to entry, you know, that we can't have a seat at the table. Let me find a way to take that barrier down. And then what's that next barrier? Oh, that's that next barrier. Let me take that one out of your way for you next.
Sure.
Right? And so I think that's been a challenge of how do we get going. I can also say it's hard to get the experience when you don't have the experience. You know, we can't really give you a shot because you don't have that on your resume. Well, I don't have it on my resume because we haven't given an opportunity, right? So you have this cycle.
Vicious cycle.
That's challenging to get into. And I can see how some folks maybe give up before success happens because it gets to be frustrating.
Sure.
Because it gets to be hard. Because it gets to be, well, nothing's happening. Why should I keep trying? Right? And I totally get that.
I love that you are taking the time to recognize, basically it sounds like you've done a SWOT analysis, right? Recognizes where your opportunities and your threats are. And now that you've recognized that, what's the strategy to overcome them? Small businesses need to pay attention to. Take time to figure out the ecosystem and then leverage who we know in that ecosystem and then come up with a plan. I think everybody has great intentions, but execution sometimes fails. And that happens in all programs, in all organizations, and then as entrepreneurs. Talk to me about advocacy. Who's advocated for you in your journey, just as a company, before we dive into our next topic?
We've got to spend time as minority entrepreneurs advocating for ourselves, spending time not just running projects, spending time estimating, but really devoting to building those relationships, identifying with who are the people that are in your sphere who can assist you, and who are those that are not currently in your sphere
who may be able to help you. So you asked about who are some of the folks that could have or could have assisted me. Well, Lynn, I know you've been helpful. You got me here on the podcast, helping to promote my business. You were also instrumental in getting me involved with the Business Journal and being featured in the Business Journal a handful of times. And the outpouring of support that I got from folks who saw those articles was great. So I appreciate that. Then also through your CCC efforts, you know, is where I got to meet some of these other contractors, including folks that we've had mentorship with, Krauss Anderson and PCL. So, you know, you've been one person who's been advocating great for me. And again, you never know where that leads and goes. And part related to that is, again, I think you can help set the table for these BIPOC folks, but then we've got to go and follow up, right? We've got Absolutely. To go and do the work. Decisions that are made about us happen when we're not around. And so we need folks who are advocates for us when we're not in the room. You might be the greatest contractor in the world, but if nobody knows you, it doesn't matter. We've got to put ourselves in the position to be known, to be visible, to be out there, and to advocate for ourselves. Otherwise, you know, we're just not going to get, we're not going to see opportunities.
Let me challenge that, because you know as well as I do that we as community attend these meet and greets and have met with the right people. We have communicated, and we've sort of, you know, put a billboard up, you know, at the busiest intersection to be found. And so I'm sure there are listeners out there who can sit here and go, I've done that, and it didn't work for me. What would you encourage them? What would you say to that? There are many of us out there, many of our listeners perhaps, who have done that grind and have yielded them nothing.
There's different ways to frame this, right? So one way to frame it is, I've done everything I can do, and nothing worked, and screw this. And I get how people feel that way, right? Or another way to reframe it is, it hasn't happened yet. What can I do to continue to put myself in position for success? Or what should I be doing differently to look for different allies, different opportunities? How can I tweak my message? Maybe I need to tweak my business. From my perspective as an entrepreneur and as a business owner, I've got to be nimble. I've got to be able to change. I've got to be malleable to try to get in where I fit in, so to speak, versus trying to give someone the same message that hasn't been working. But I would say, you know, this stuff isn't easy. It's not easy, and it doesn't happen fast. Again, my belief is that we're better together.
The pivot to do and challenge the system is on us. If you don't know how to pivot, there are resources out there who can help. And I think if we went beyond just being the project manager, just being the estimator, but also being a strategist in our business to address what our own company barriers are, those opportunities and threats, then we would be a lot further.
Yeah, and I think just to put a button on this, I don't want to belabor the point too much, but there are genuine barriers to entry. There are genuine challenges. There are these real things that create challenges for small businesses, WMBE businesses, and what are we going to do about it now? I think it's easy to point the finger at somebody else and say, they're the reason I'm not successful. Or, you know, again, alternatively, it's much more intellectually and emotionally difficult to look inward and say, what can I do differently?
Absolutely.
Right? That's the real way to improve, is to improve us and to improve how do we see the world, how do we view it, and then allows us better clarity to move forward.
If we position ourselves for the win every single time and dare them to say no because we have checked all of our boxes, it'll be difficult for them to really argue. I think that if we can eliminate all of these barriers that they say we have, again, I dare them to say no.
That's right.
I want to go macro. I want to take a step back a little bit, right? How can the industry be more inclusive?
Construction, I think, is often seen and viewed as a secondary opportunity, as a fallback piece, as a less desirable piece, you know, that our young people that we're pushing everybody into these four-year colleges, everybody needs to get a four-year degree. And so I think that is one of the main challenges that we face, is that fight for talent. And the fight that, again, that's construction wide, as you're talking about this macro level. I think one of the challenges that may be more granular, specific to us, Jay Benson, and to other minority contractors, is how do we grow it for those of us that want to grow and scale our business like I do? Some of the challenges are related to these things that are insurance related, bonding related, funding related. It's harder to get big when you're not big. When you're big and huge and you're very successful and you've got lots of money, the banks are happy to give you money. So we want to be very deliberate about taking on the right amount of projects, the right size of projects, the right type of work for us right now, and let that grow and evolve over time as we bring in more and more talent to assist us.
So let me close this out. What's on the horizon for Jay Benson? What's the next box that you're checking?
We are going to be staffing up and looking to bring on more seasoned construction professionals, so estimators and commercial project managers, to really help accelerate the opportunities that we have in front of us. We are really blessed with some great opportunities, you know, through your efforts and advocacy, through folks at AGC, and through our mentor partners. And so we're going to be in growth mode here locally in the Twin Cities area, but also moving this, kind of taking this show on the road, so to speak, for national opportunities. And so we've been in conversations with the likes of Target, Cargill, General Mills, all who are interested in the work that we're doing, what we're about, and hope that at the next conversation that you and I have, you know, I hope to be telling you how great things have been, not just here locally, but again, kind of around the country, as we look to take this model of union contracting, apprenticeship work through workforce development centers in other cities around the country, and provide meaningful opportunities for employment for folks. That's what's on the horizon for us. Again, I think big, but do the day-to-day blocking and tackling basic things each day here. But again, to reach those goals, we've got to do the right stuff each and every time.
And with that, Paul, I want to thank you for sharing your story and experiences. Jay Benson is certainly on its way to growing strategically and most definitely with your heart and leadership. Feel free to connect with Paul, whose information can be found on our website, procurementgames.org. To our listeners, today's episode really put emphasis on strategizing and positioning your business to win. We discussed the idea of pivoting and making sure that you check the boxes for your own internal operations so you can dare them to say no. And if the union option is something you really want to talk through, please reach out to me. Next week, we are changing things up. We have our very first trailblazer, Ramona Wilson, who will share the ways that 3M has practiced inclusion of historically marginalized community. I also want to share that we are excited to announce our very first episode of The Talk, our live stream version of Conversations on our YouTube channel. Mark your calendars for January 11th at 9 a.m. Finally, I want to thank all of you for helping us achieve over 18,000 plus downloads in our first 3 episodes. Please continue to smash that like button and share your comment. And remember, don't just go after that low-hanging fruit. Look up and see the whole tree. Until next time.